agenda item of the day. If you could take their seats, please. Please take your seats. Okay, we're on to the final agenda item of the day. Shouldn't take too long. We have Dr. Sullivan here from RSSC. He's going to be delivering a series of reports and findings to the council. Welcome, Dr. Sullivan. Whenever you're ready, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Pat Sullivan. I'm from Cornell University, and I am a member of your SSC. And I'm giving two reports today. On the agenda are listed the review of the Massachusetts Fisheries Institute report, and I'll be giving that. And then I also chaired the swept area seabed impact peer review, and so I'll be giving that report as well. And then Mike Fogarty is in the audience, an SSC member as well, and he'll be coming up after I give those two reports to give the report on the Bigelow survey calibration methods and then the report on the whiting and the hake, if that's okay with you. All right. So to start off with, I'm going to be going over the review of the economic and scientific conditions in the Massachusetts multi-species ground fishery. And so the SSC was asked by the council to review the Massachusetts Marine Fisheries Institute report entitled Economic and Scientific Conditions in the Massachusetts Multi-Species Groundfish Fishery, which was dated November 2010. And I'm going to just hit on some of the high points. But basically, the report from MFI states that scientifically valid alternative reference points have been identified which can trigger increases in annual catch limits without sacrificing conservation if stock-specific direct estimates of FMSY had been used instead of proxy estimates, if several stock assessments had not been adjusted for retrospective patterns, and if a buffer of 0.75 between the estimates of OFL and ABC had not been applied. So the Scientific and Statistical Committee concluded that the information in the MFI report does not justify revision of the ABCs recommended by the ABC and adopted later by the Council. However, the MFI report raised important issues, and the SSC concluded that additional research would be needed on the following areas, that is, these four specifically. Characteristics of FMSY proxies with respect to risk, causes of retrospective patterns, performance of alternative risk tolerance in the face of scientific and management uncertainty, and options for managing mixed stock fisheries. And so although not explicitly included in the SSC's terms of reference, the SSC also discussed the economic analysis, which was included in the MFI report. All right, so I'm going to touch a little bit on some of the terms of reference that were provided to us. So the first terms of reference was number one, did the direct or proxy estimates of FMSY and BMSY as status determination criteria for groundfish stocks assessed in GARM 3 represent the best available science? And the SSC reviewed the approach by the GARM 3 to derive biological reference points, and direct estimation of reference points as suggested the MFI report requires the specification of a model relating recruitment as a function of spawning stock biomass. At least that's how the MFI report did it. GARM 3 carefully examined the stock recruitment data where sufficient data were available to evaluate the direct estimates were scientifically warranted. But none of them were, except for white hake. And the GARM 3 judged that that the stock recruitment relationship was informative. Mean recruitment was similar for both direct and proxy approaches, but the biological reference points under the spawn-recruit relationship varied widely among the different choices of the different models that were available there. And we ended up using a proxy for that species as well. The SSC notes that the GARM-3 determinations were made through an extensive, transparent, and well-documented peer review process, very extensive. The SSC concluded that the approach to estimate the biological reference points was the appropriate and was appropriate and represented the best scientific information available. Right. The SSC notes that the approach used by the GARM-3 recognizes the uncertainties in the stock-recruitment relationship, provides biological reference points that are robust to these uncertainties, and allows for future use of the direct approach of estimating the FMSY and BMSY reference points should that be scientifically warranted. In terms of reference two, if the direct estimates of FMSY and BMSY best represent the best available science, but proxy estimates were chosen, did that decision reflect an explicit precautionary decision that led to double counting when the SSC recommended the buffers for scientific uncertainty? So I guess the answer is no and yes, or yes and no. So FMSY and BMSY were not the best available science. However, if they were, some uncertainty would have had to been taken into account. And, of course, part of the discussion that occurs is the uncertainty that's associated with the scientific component as opposed to the uncertainty associated with implementation and, therefore, the management component. So recognizing the inherent limitations of the stock recruitment data and the models for most of the GARM stocks to estimate FMSY and BMSY, the SSC considered that the proxy estimates based on the percentage of maximum spawning potential represent the best scientific information available. The SSC notes that the FMSY proxies were lower than the directed estimates in six of the seven cases where the directed estimates were available. However, as discussed above, this was considered to be, that is, the proxies were considered to be more scientifically valid. So the actual ones based on MSY were not considered to be valid. So while the proxies are generally lower than the directed estimates, such as they are, in this case less risky, their absolute risk characteristics are not currently known. The SSC could not conclude whether their use was risk neutral or adverse, and if the latter, if they were double counting for uncertainty, would have had to would have been a consequence. So this would depend on the relationship between the proxies to the true but unknown stock-specific MSY reference points. So part of the issue, of course, that we keep coming back to is the MSY reference points are not known. And if one tries to estimate them, they tend to be poorly estimated. So it's difficult to judge whether the proxy approaches were, in fact, risk-averse in that context. So the proxy approach was chosen because it resulted in a more scientifically sound and robust estimates, not because of its risk properties. All right. Terms of reference three. Comment on other GARM decisions discussed in the MFI report, exclusive of the proxies, that are relevant to assessing multi-species stocks, providing information for their OFLs, and setting ABCs. All right, so what we concluded there was the MFI PowerPoint presentation is a little bit less affirmative than the report was, and recommends that overfishing limits should be based on risk-neutral stock assessments. The SSC agrees that OFL should be based on risk-neutral stock assessments. That's the way it should be done. And the GARM 3 concluded that the base case models were risk-prone and so not risk-neutral. And the SSC agreed, therefore, they cannot be used as a basis for increasing ACLs, as the MFI report concluded they could. The SSC concluded that it was appropriate to adjust for the retrospective bias in the model outputs. Retrospective adjustments are used as a sound scientific method aimed at producing unbiased stock assessments. Not to adjust in the face of a persistent retrospective pattern where biomass is consistently overestimated and fishing mortality is consistently underestimated would likely be risk-prone. Similarly, not to adjust in the face of persistent retrospective pattern where the biomass is consistently underestimated and fishing mortality is consistently overestimated would be risk-averse. In either case, not to adjust is not risk-neutral. All right. In June 2009, a memorandum that was sent to the Council on buffers between OFL and ABC, the SSC noted the following. Medium to long-term probabilistic stock projections are highly uncertain. That's number one. Number two, accurately estimating probabilities at the tail of the probability distribution, either high or low probabilities, is particularly difficult. Number three, even if projections are unbiased and the probabilities are accurately estimated, some fish stocks will not be rebuilt by the end of the rebuilding period. And four, the available data are inadequate to conduct probabilistic projections for some stocks. The SSC recommended that the Council consider ABC methods that are robust to these 4 points and that such an approach be derived from the guidance provided by the National Standard Guidelines provision for a stock or stock complex, quote, that is not rebuilt by TMAX, the end of the rebuilding period, then the fishing mortality rate should be maintained at F rebuild or 75% of the MFMT, that is, the maximum fishing mortality threshold, i.e. FMSY, whichever is less. So considering the 17 to 20 groundfish stocks were rebuilding, 17 of the 20 groundfish stocks were rebuilding, and many are not achieving the scheduled rebuilding, the SSC anticipated that the prescribed ABC specifications would be applicable to many of the groundfish stocks. The SSC concluded that the absence of better scientific information on stock-specific appropriate buffers between OFL and the ABC, a relatively straightforward ABC, and robust specification should be applied to all groundfish stocks in all stages of rebuilding or long-term maintenance of optimum yield. Given the guidance for specifying ABC as the lesser of 75% or FMSY or F rebuild, the definition of optimum yield in the current multi-species fisheries management plan as that associated with 75% of FMSY. The SSC recommended to the Council that this ABC specification be applied to all groundfish stocks. The SSC reiterates this approach given the current information and considers that the ABCs recommended for the 2010 and 2011 still apply. Now, the SSC agrees with there's so many M's and F's in this. The SSC agrees with the MFI report that there is a need for more explicit discussion of risk tolerance with the Council. I think we've said that several times. And that the size of the future buffers could be different for different stocks, depending on uncertainties associated with each assessment and potentially different risk tolerance among stocks. The SSC's role is to advise the Council on biological, ecological, social, and economic elements of risk associated with overfishing a given stock. It's the Council's role, of course, to determine a risk policy based on that technical guidance. The SSC would then set the ABCs in light of this risk policy. This approach is consistent with the SSC's 2010 review of the ABC control rule for all council-managed fisheries. Progress is unlikely to be rapid enough on this issue for the development of ABCs for 2012 through 2013, but we should certainly consider it for the future. Okay, term of reference four, the final of the four terms of reference. In light of the MFI report, are there recommendations concerning additional information needed by the SSC to gauge uncertainty and risk and therefore to set buffers? So the SSC considers the MFI report raised a number of issues that we actually have been discussing quite a bit and wish to continue to discuss. Some of these are national in scope, so extend beyond our region, and require additional scientific work and potential modifications of the national standard guidelines, thus requiring the attention of the agency. So these include several that I'm just going to list but not go into any detail on. They include the proxies themselves and the risks associated with that, the retrospective patterns and what to do about them. We need to address the reliability and risk characteristics associated with the methodologies used to assess the stocks and the biological reference points. The mixed stock nature of the New England groundfish fishery is another issue that needs to be addressed, and we spent a lot of time discussing that. And in association with that, the SSC considered that the national standard guidelines on the mixed stock exception needs some guidance. There's a lot of issues there that that are I think preventing optimal management, but it's in the law, so we have to deal with it somehow. Finally, the SSC recommends that reasons for the unharvested commercial ACLs should be explored too. Finally, in conclusion, a comment on the economic analysis. The MFI report compared the magnitude and distribution of revenues among vessels since sector management began in May of 2010 to review revenues in previous years. The SSC discussed these comparisons, but because a review of the economic information was not included in the SSC's terms of reference, there was no basis for framing the review and no firm conclusions were drawn. So basically, we needed some guidance as to what questions were needed to be addressed. However, the SSC members noted instances in which the available data were not used correctly and others where the baselines for comparisons made interpretation of the economic impacts difficult. So overall, the economic analysis was difficult to interpret, and so we left it at that. That's my report, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there, and we'll have a moment here for questions or comments from council, and then I will take some questions or comments from the audience, but with the complete understanding, we have four topics to get through today under this agenda item. I'll start with Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thank you, John. And thank you, Pat. Appreciate the work that the SSC did with this review of the MFI report to help me understand exactly what the SSC did conclude. I had to spend some time working through the document that you've just worked through, Pat, to understand exactly what was being said. It is complex. It's a bit complicated, obviously. So to help me work through it, I prepared a letter that I emailed to all council members so you would get my personal perspective as to my reaction to the review of the SSC. In addition to my letter that you all have, I see that two other letters were made available today. One letter from Dan Georgiana, one of the co-authors of the report. The other letter from Brian Rothschild, which speaks specifically to some of the issues that were addressed by the SSC in its review. So I appreciate all the time that was put into this. And I certainly appreciate the council at its last meeting deciding it was appropriate to have the report reviewed by the SSC. I'm especially pleased that the SSC has agreed with the MFI conclusions that, you know, the OFLs should be based on direct estimates of MSY, FMSY, when possible, and they should be based on risk-neutral stock assessments. Also, that the ABCs should be based on the council's desired risk tolerance. Those were our conclusions, and the SSC agreed with them. I'm also pleased that the SSC agreed that the report has raised some very important issues, and Pat has gone through them, such as needed valuable research on options for managing mixed stock fisheries that address trade-offs between net benefits for the nation and the protection of weak stocks. I had hoped that when the SSC did this review, there would be that kind of agreement, and I also had hoped that there would be some examples from the SSC regarding what now needs to be done, how we should move forward. So that has happened. So I'm pleased with that. Now, I was present at that two-day meeting, and I heard most of the discussion, not all of it, so I was able to hear individual SSC members' comments, and that was extremely helpful. Some individuals in particular, I thought, were quite insightful. Mike Sissonwein, Dr. Sissonwein, being one good example of an individual who knows this backwards and forwards, and he was very constructive. So now we have this consensus view of the SSC that was developed through emails going back and forth to help refine the document, refine the conclusions and the recommendations. So that is good. Now, regarding the GARM that was referenced a number of times in the written report from the SSC, clearly the SSC had to rely very heavily on GARM 3 results. And why wouldn't it? Because the terms of reference that were crafted for the SSC do pretty much oblige the SSC to focus on GARM 3 results relative to the concept of best available science. I personally thought that particular focus created by the terms of reference was a bit overdone because the MFI report had concluded that there were alternatives within the best available science for calculating higher ABCs. Anyways, because of this heavy reliance on GARM 3, the council has received a letter from Brian Rothschild that makes some points about GARM 3, and he might want to speak to that issue before we leave this topic. I'll make one other point, because all my points are made in the letter, so I'm not going to go over them. The excellent recommendations offered by the SSC, I just want to call the Council's attention to them because they're relevant to what we are now doing with sector management and where we have focused our attention on consolidation issues, excessive shares, also on some of the points that were brought up by Eric Schwab this morning, the conclusions of the review that he has undertaken for the benefit of this council and for, of course, NIMS, and that is a consideration of social and economic factors, more so than we have before. So one recommendation from the SSC that I think we should all embrace is that the Council should consider additional social and economic information in the development of ABC control rules and in setting ABCs, rather than relegated to secondary impact analyses. That's good. Such an evaluation would also identify potential problems of misspecifications or inconsistencies in the guidelines, the National Standard Guidelines. And then the SSC says, and this is good advice, while this is a significant research undertaking, it is both critically important and achievable. Then the other important recommendation that I'll highlight is the one about the mixed stock nature of the New England groundfish fishery. I won't give the details. It's all spelled out in the report provided by the SSC. And finally, the SSC did agree with the MFI report that there is a need for a more explicit discussion of risk tolerance with the Council, and that the size of future buffers could be different for different stocks, depending on the uncertainties associated with each assessment and potential different risk tolerance among stocks. The bottom line there, I think, is that this Council, we all have to devote some time, some serious time, to policy that relates to the amount of risk we are willing to assume in the setting of the ABCs. And according to the SSC, they intend to provide us with that advice on the biological, the ecological, the social, and the economic elements of risk that would then be tolerated by us based on our specific risk policy that we would set for them to use. So overall, I thought it was a very good undertaking by this council, by the SSC, and I'm in general pleased with the results, but of course disappointed with the primary conclusion, which was that the ABCs should not be adjusted upwards. But that's discussion for another time.
Mary Beth.
Well, I just, this issue of risk tolerance and the council's role in setting the risk tolerance, this is not the first time that the SSC has mentioned it in reports to this council, and I was hoping it we could be, like, putting that discussion on the calendar in the very near future. I don't think we're going to have that discussion today. I think it's going to take a while, but this is not the first time it's come up, and we moved through these latest amendments and working with the SSC is a new process, and ACLs and AMs, had a lot of stuff go on, and perhaps this is an opportunity in which we need to sort of, sit back and figure it out, and I would hope we would do that soon.
Yeah, I mean, I've attended all but two SSC meetings over the past 3 years and raised this issue at every one of them, asking the SSC to come to the council and guide us through a process so we can transmit back to them what our risk tolerance is. This isn't a new issue. In fact, when the SSC reports to us here, I generally make the same comment. I've been making it for 3 years. I'm not sure who starts the conversation. I guess what we'll need to do is send a command down to SSC to start this process and provide us with some alternatives or some guidance on how to have this conversation. But I agree with you, Dr. Pierce. I agree with the SSC report. I agree with that part of the MFI report, that this is the next thing we need to tackle. Dave Gaethje.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with all of you. That was what I was going to raise, and actually this letter that Brian provided just a few minutes ago does call for the council to sponsor a workshop to deal with this subject. I think that's probably the right way forward. Let's take the council and the SSC and interested parties, throw them in a room, and get this solved so that we all agree on what our tolerance for risk is and how we want to apply it on a stock-by-stock basis. I think one thing I learned from attending that meeting was that risk is not being applied the way I thought it was, and that risk, I thought we were applying the risk. It turns out the risk is already being applied, and then we're applying more risk tolerance. So, I, for one, have changed my view of how I want to apply risk. The second issue I had, and I brought this up to the SSC as well, is these points on page 8 at the end here on the National Standard 1 guidelines on the mixed stock exception need to be dealt with, and the question is, who's the best person to write the letter to the service? Is it the council or is it the SSC? And I'd like the council to have that discussion today, because I do think a letter has to go forward. I wish Eric was still here. This is the whole legal question that I was trying to get at just before lunch. This is a question for the lawyers. And it is very plain to me from listening to that discussion. I mean, Mike Sissonwine said it clearly as could be. This is simple. This whole problem would go away if we just employed the mixed stock exception. That was the quote. And, I hate to say it, but I've been saying this since the start of Amendment 16. And, we get consistently told we can't use it. The only time you can use the mixed stock exception is when you don't need it in the first place. That's it's just a patently ridiculous way to keep doing things. So I don't know what the procedurally correct way to do this would be, but I would ask the council today to decide either to write a letter that backs up these comments from the SSC or to request that the SSC write the same letter. But either way, this letter has to go to Washington.
Anyone else on the council? Pat.
Yeah, I need to comment. On the risk tolerance discussion, the council may not recall it because it was early in the process, and I think people were struggling with understanding the new guidelines and the new processes, but the council certainly did have the discussion on risk and risk tolerance and how it would be applied. I completely agree, though, that it may be time in the process to revisit that so people understand better how it does work and what decisions were previously made and why. On the mixed stock exception, we've responded to that letter from the council already. There was a request, we did send a letter, I want to say last summer maybe, it cannot be applied in this situation. And I would remind the council that you did, in fact, use effectively the mixed stock exception in Amendment 13, and so it has already been applied once to the ground for fish fishery and during the rebuilding periods, these rebuilding periods for ground fish.
Anyone else on the council? Okay, I'll go to the Dr. Pierce.
Just one quick point regarding the mixed stock exception, which of course has been discussed many, many times by this council, also was involved in a lawsuit that the Commonwealth filed against the Secretary of Commerce a few years ago. Just draw the council's attention to comments that the council submitted back in 2008 to Mark Milliken at the time, National Marine Fisheries Service, regarding proposed changes, revisions in the National Standard Number 1 guidelines. And one of the things that was proposed at the time was to change how the mixed stock exception would be applied. And if you recall, the council was very specific in its comments submitted to the service regarding how the proposed revisions essentially made the mixed stock exception unusable. That was the emphasis, and I've got a copy of it in front of me, so I'm not going to read it except to say that the council recommends retaining the current exception for mixed stock fisheries and then stated how it was worded, and then it was changed to make it unusable, and therein lies part of our problem.
Anyone else in the council? We'll go to the audience. Anyone in the audience? Dr. Rothschild?
Thank you. I'm here speaking not for myself, but for the Massachusetts Fishery Institute. And what I'd like to do is make some comments on the SSC report that relate really to optimum yield. I'll probably take 5 minutes to make these comments. There may be some technical issues that come up, but we can deal with those. So I'd start by saying that the MFI appreciates the council's willingness to review our report. We feel it's appropriate for us to offer a response to help the council move forward. We also feel it's appropriate to highlight for the council's benefit GARM-related issues raised during the SSC review. Due to the SSC's heavy reliance on GARM 3, results for critiquing the MFI report, issues and concerns about GARM 3 are part of this MFI response to the SSC review. Council terms of reference for the review oblige frequent reference to GARM 3 and led Bob O'Boyle, GARM 3 chairman and SSC member, to prepare a background paper with observations on the MFI report. Contrasting the report's claims and conclusions with GARM, recognizing the intent and purpose of the MFI report, the SSC review should have enabled the council to advise the secretary as to whether catch levels were set too low to avoid overfishing while achieving optimum yield. Specifically, did GARM 3 produce the best available science? Are catch levels suggested in the MFI report more appropriate than catch levels based on GARM 3? Were all valid options communicated to the council? Unfortunately, the SSC review begs these questions. The review places in bold relief the scientific shortfalls of GARM 3. The only claim made in the SSC review for best available science is a statement, and I quote, GORM 3 determinations were made through an extensive, transparent, and well-documented peer review process. Further, the review asserts that, and again I quote, the approach to estimate the biological reference points was appropriate and represented best scientific information available. To us, this is merely a procedural reply. A valid process doesn't mean that the catch levels are correct. Just consider the many well-known errors propagated by material exposed to extensive, transparent, well-documented peer review. We all know about all the fish will be dead by the year 2050 and various stock assessments that have been problematic throughout the world. The fact of the matter is GORM 3 did not provide the Council with a full and transparent analysis of the status of the stocks. GORM 3 did not follow established procedures in the scientific literature, and GORM 3 inserted arbitrary decisions into advice to the Council, evidently unbeknownst to Council members. We recognize these are bold assertions. They are impossible to completely detail in this letter, but we do provide concrete examples. We intend to elaborate and engage with our colleagues on these assertions to improve assessments and the basis for ABC setting, much along the spirit that was articulated by Eric Schwab this morning. First, regarding a full and transparent analysis of the status of the stocks, GORM 3 did not reveal to the Council that direct estimation of MSY was possible, either from age-based or biomass dynamics production models. The reviewers of the MFI report seem to be unaware of this elementary consequence of the theories of stock assessment. The reviewers state, and I quote, direct estimation of reference points as suggested in the MFI report require the specification of a model relating recruitment as a function of spawning stock biomass, end of quote. This is incorrect. The very concept of MSY is based on the production model and does not require a model that relates recruitment to spawning stock biomass. In fact, the Science Center has a toolbox capable of making these calculations. Our preliminary calculations suggest that overfishing and overfished are not as rampant as shown in GORM 3. Second, GORM 3 did not follow established scientific procedures. This fact is put into stark relief by the SSC review. The framers of GORM 3 adopted this is a bit of jargon, and I apologize, the FX percent biological reference point. In order to calculate the biological reference point in a way that is consistent with the literature, it is necessary to use a stock and recruitment relationship to obtain a value of stock and recruit and spawning stock biomass per recruit to obtain yield as a function of fishing mortality. But the framers of GORM could not obtain a literature-consistent stock and recruitment relationship, so they substituted something different. A stochastic projection with a constant recruitment or two-stage recruitment assumption. This results in using a procedure that has not been vetted in the literature. The use of the stochastic projection discards the well-known relationship between stock and recruitment and as a consequence produces results that cannot be consistent with science-accepted dynamics of fish populations. Third, the framers of GORM 3 made arbitrary management decisions and passed these to the Council without informing the Council that their decision was arbitrary. The arbitrary choice of X equals 40 and F 40% should be of considerable concern to the Council. Why was X equal 40 and not X equal 30, for example, chosen? The scientific literature says that F 35% will yield at least 75% of MSY, depending on the shape of the stock recruitment curve. While it can be argued that high values of X contribute to high biomasses, there is little in the literature to ensure that these high biomasses are possible. In fact, yellowtail flounder, the yield has been decreasing. By yield, I don't mean of the fish stock, but from a fillet, has been decreasing while the stock has been at this high level. And by the way, the fact that F35% is thought to yield at least 75% MSY is the reason that additional 25% results in double counting risk. We conclude via these three examples that GORM 3, while possibly using a transparent process, did not provide a transparent analysis to the Council. Therefore, the Council had no way of knowing whether it was receiving the best available science. We have shown using three of many possible issues that the best scientific process was violated both procedurally and substantively. While the SSC review did not truly address the MFI report in terms of its key questions or intention, we maintain that the Council continues to underestimate ACLs. We recognize that our comments are highly technical. However, these technical issues lie at the heart of best available science. We believe that in addition to reconsidering the ACLs, the Council sponsors a workshop to generate a simple and transparent explanation of stock assessment procedures that are being used, and more importantly, we think that the Council needs to work on the development of innovative stock assessment procedures that rely extensively on cooperative research. That, Mr. Chairman, is the conclusion of the MFI response to the review. We have a tremendous respect for the Council and the SSC, but we do think that the matter is not finished. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Dan, did you have comments you wanted to make?
Thank you. My name is Dan Georgiana. I'm an economist at SMAST and one of the authors of the MFI report. I'm also a member of the SSC, but I'm not reporting from the SSC. I had recused myself from deliberations because I was an author, one of the authors of the MFI report. Steve Catron also recused himself. So I had no role. I played no role in the SSC report. I want to talk specifically about the buffers, both buffers, the so-called scientific buffer and the management buffer, and risk tolerance. I think basically the and I won't. I also delivered a letter to you, and you'll see where I quoted a couple of places from the SSC report that support what I'm saying. But I have a specific recommendation as well. The size of the buffers represent a trade-off between the probability of overfishing and social and economic impacts from the loss of yield. In other words, a reduction in the probability of overfishing causes a larger buffer, which then reduces the yield. This is not a small measure. I did some very simple calculations. The buffers for groundfish species between the current OFL and ACLs comprise 33% of the total groundfish OFL worth $121 million per year at average prices for 2010. So the SSC presents a solution to this, and I'm going to read the solution again because I think it's important to think about this in a practical way. So the solution is, the SSC's role is to advise the Council on biological, ecological, social, and economic elements of risk associated with overfishing a given stock. It is the Council's role to determine a risk policy based on that technical guidance. I think that suggestion is circular because basically the SSC responds to terms of reference from the Council. So I don't know where that process would start. And there's been a little bit of discussion today about how to start it, and it sort of comes around that the SSC would give some sort of general idea on the elements of risk to the Council. Then the Council would formulate a risk policy. Then the SSC would use that risk policy to determine the ABC. I don't actually see how that would work. I think if you ask the SSC for advice on biological, economic, and social conditions for risk tolerance, you're going to get some advice that you can't understand very well, plus a request for more research. So I think a better way to start this process, and this is a proposition, a proposal from the MFI, not necessarily from the SSC, or not from the SSC, it's from the MFI, That you include in your terms of reference for ABC determination a request that the SSC consider economic, ecological, and social elements in determining the ABC. I think what you are likely to get back from that, at least at the beginning, is some choice. This is essentially what we did for the scallop ABC. That is, a biologist from the Science Center came up with this measure of trading off overfishing, probability of overfishing, with a loss in yield, and then we gave to you a choice of different ABCs. I think that's the initial result, and eventually we would work out some way to figure this out. But I think talking in this ethereal world, I don't know what risk tolerance means. I know I drove here, right? So I think I made some sort of risk decision to drive here, and you know, amidst the possibility of being killed out there. But I think if we try to do this in a very general way, without specific connection to an ABC, we're going to end up talking about this for a long time. One of the things that Eric Schwab talked about, or Press Pete, I don't know which, is this back and forth that we do between the council and the various committees. And I think this is a perfect example of that. This issue has gone back and forth without going forward in the 3 years that I've been on the SSC. Many people, including Eric Schwab, calls for more social and economic analysis. And this is a very specific recommendation. That is that you include in your terms of reference the request of the SSC that they consider social and economic analysis in setting the ABC. That's a very straightforward use, I think, of social and economic analysis. Would also put economic and social analysis at the beginning of the process rather than after the process is over or at the end of the process. And I think in this case the buffers would be driven by scientific analysis, both biological analysis and social science analysis. Thank you.
Richie.
Rich Canastro, Whalen City Auction. I am no doctor, but sometimes they call me Dr. Hyde or Dr. Jekyll. But what I just want to mention in referring to what Brian said about yellowtail yield, and I brought this up to his attention and a few people's attention, that yellowtail yields roughly between 40 and 42%, meaning the both fillets is 40 to 42% of the whole fish. I used to be in processing. I processed millions of pounds of yellowtail. This year so far, the best yield I have seen or heard from the process is a 35%. The fish is skinny, translucent. The size is there, but they just have no meat on them. Why? I don't know. Why the yield is low? I have no idea, other than maybe the biomass is too big. I heard as far as skate wings, so many skates out there eating their food source. But I do know that there's a problem. I plan to be up here on Thursday. Tonight, one vessel, 40,000 pounds of yellowtail. The vessels are saving that to the end of the year because it was a choke species. Of course, Georgia Bank yellowtail, you cannot roll over into next year. There's no 10% rollover, so they're trying to catch them. But just to give you an idea what's happening out in the market, vessels had to pay 75 to 85 cents to get yellowtail. We're selling them for 70 cents on the auction, because of that 35% yield. But if I'm trying to be here, I'm planning on being here on Thursday, and I will bring some yellowtails just so that you can physically look at them. Okay? Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Frank?
Yes, thanks, John. While I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Rothschild and the MFI, but I do think that I need to respond to some of the comments that were made about best available science and GARM-3. I think that GARM-3 could be considered SAR-SARC on steroids. The SAR-SARC generally covers two or three species in a week. SARC-3 covered 19 or 20 in that same week. And I think that we all understand and recognize that the process that was used in those reviews was a process that is, while it was on steroids, it was a process that is used twice a year, every single year, 53 times now. The management review that has been referenced several times today and the comments that Eric made after made comments about the way the Science Center, the regional office, and the council operates. I'd just like to state two very positive comments that were made about the Science Center and the SAWSARC, and that is the SAWSARC is considered an industry best practice, which means that the process that we use to peer review the science in the Northeast Fishery Science Center and in this region is probably among the best, if not the best. It's certainly the oldest in the country, so I think that it's a very good process, and the GARM 3 followed the process that's used in that SAWSARC, and also that the stock assessments are produced in a very formal and under a very professional process, very formal and very professional process. So I think that the question about whether or not the best available science was provided to the council and the SSC in the development of the ABCs in FY 10 and 11 was, in fact, the best available science, and I do believe that there was a very clear statement made by the SSC in the review of the MFI report that stated that. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on to the next item. Dr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I had the good fortune of being the chair of the review committee for the swept area seabed impact model, which is known as the SASE model, that this council has funded research on. And the review committee met in Providence, Rhode Island in February 15th through 17th of this year. And the council, the committee was made up of myself and Jamie Cornain, who's in the audience. She's an Environmental Defense Fund postdoctoral federal research fellow at the University of New Hampshire. Dan Holland, who's an environmental economist from the Northwest Fisheries Science Center, NOAA. Rich Langton, chief coastal ecology branch, NOAA Fisheries Science, and Doug Lipton, an economist from the University of Maryland. And so what I'd like to do, the report is rather lengthy, and lots of technical things are contained in it. What I would like to do is read into the record the executive summary and the conclusions. So the swept area seabed impact model is a method for spatially estimating the adverse effects of fishing on the physical and biological features of seabed habitat. The model combines as inputs fishing effort data, seabed substrate and energy data, associations of biological habitat components with seabed substrate, and gear-specific habitat vulnerability parameters. It produces as outputs indexes representing the adverse effect of fishing effort on seabed habitat features, which they call Z. This index can be configured to represent equilibrium impacts under simulated under constant effort assumptions, which they call Z-inf, or to represent estimated impacts under historical distributions of fishing effort, Z-realized, or to represent estimated impacts under proposed distributions of fishing effort, which they call Z-net. The latter can be compared with total revenues within a grid cell averaged across years to create an estimated ratio of habitat impacts per dollar of net revenue gained. The estimates typically are at a resolution of 100 square kilometer grid scales for a geographic region that extends from 3 nautical miles offshore to maximum depths that vary between 82 and 302 meters for different gear types from the main Canada border to the North Carolina-South Carolina border, and includes the Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank, and the Mid-Atlantic Bight and the associated slope regions. So the Habitat Plan Development Team developed this model over the years 2007 to 2010 at the request of the Council, and this is considered to be Phase 2 of the EFH Omnibus Amendment 2, and the model at various stages of development has been reviewed by the Council's Scientific and Statistical Committee several times. The SSC recommended that a formal peer review of the SASE model might benefit the process, and that's what the result of this this review that I'm reading to you now is a result of. I just want to comment at this point that I truly appreciated the expertise on the plan development team and all of the work that went into that, and I think they did a very good job of putting this all together. Let's see. So in brief, the committee believes that the model is a good first step in providing an objective mechanism for synthesizing many of the complex interactions that take place between fishing activity and bottom habitat. While the approach has its limitations, it may fruitfully be employed to explore potential impacts of spatially distributed fishing effort as specified by gear type. In particular, it can be used to facilitate discussion of seabed habitat impacts that alternative management strategies, which may alter the amount and or distribution of effort over space, gears, and potential time. While the model has been constructed to evaluate the spatial impact of fishing effort distributions on benthic habitat, any discussions of impact should also be considered in the broader context of other control mechanisms such as effort reduction, redistribution of effort in time, reallocation of effort by gear type, and the modification of existing gear types. The committee anticipates and encourages the continued development and improvement of the SASE model to reduce uncertainty and improve model formulations and to verify assumptions and input parameter values. The council should work together with developers of the model and the National Fisheries Service to foster this evolution. Adaptive management strategies coupled with good survey and other monitoring efforts would be useful to consider in this regard. The model can and should be used to identify and prioritize empirical research that will be that will contribute most to improving the accuracy of the estimates of habitat impacts produced by the model. Then towards the end, we have our conclusions. The SASE modeling approach is a good first step in providing an objective mechanism for synthesizing many of the complex interactions that take place between fishing activity and bottom habitat. I mean, basically, the model serves as a sort of lightning rod for addressing questions, and in that sense, it's really good. Although the approach has its limitations, as all approaches do, it appears that it can be fruitfully employed to explore potential spatial impacts of fishing effort by gear type. It's an objective mechanism for characterizing for discussion the impacts that alternative management strategies have on seabed impact. While the model has been constructed to evaluate the impact of fishing effort distributions on benthic habitat, any discussions of impact should also be considered in the broader context of other control mechanisms. Although the SASE model itself provides useful information for fisheries managers and stakeholders, the practicability analyses presented in the document are not ready for use in their present form. Although the potential is there, it's really an interesting approach, but it's not quite ready yet. And in particular, it's not ready with regard to predicting the impacts of opening and closing areas, particularly with reopening areas. Finally, it is recommended that the continued evolution and development of the approach be encouraged, in particular in the areas of biogenic as opposed to geological characterization of the habitat, model refinement to include representative functional responses and uncertainty, and here what that means is basically how quickly the seabed bottom is likely to respond to seabed impacts, and expanded characterization of the economic, behavioral, and social consequences should be further developed and explored. I think this model is really interesting. I think it'll serve as its purpose in the sense of exploring ideas. I don't know that you can look at it and say, okay, what's the impact going to be here, what's the impact going to be here, but as a focal point for discussion, I think it'll be very useful, and already we can see it being used by National Fisheries Service and even council members to try to interpret what's going on. So I think one should move forward with it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Pat. Questions from the council? Anyone in the audience? Yes, sir. No, I'm sorry, up at the microphone, please, so we can get it on record.
I was just wondering if you had a model of the impact on the environment and the benthic environment that the planned windmills would have up and down the East Coast. Is there a way to measure that, sir? Because they're planning on putting them on an essential habitat area called the Nantucket Lightship Area. So I just wanted to put that on the record. Thanks.
So that's a good question, and we addressed it. We stated that the anticipated use of the model and its outputs beyond its current intended capabilities is an area of concern. So the thing with a model like this is people would like to apply it to lots of different things, and it might not have been constructed in that way. And in particular, it may not be useful to inform other important questions, quote, such as implementing marine spatial planning in the context of wind generation, for example.
Okay. Dave Preble?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank Dr. Sullivan and thank the SSC for their review of the SASE model. It represents an awful lot of work over a long period of time. And we are now ready to move forward in using it to help us make decisions, not to make the decisions for us, but to help us in making decisions on specific management strategies for the fisheries. As far as the windmill thing is concerned, I really appreciate that question. And I think in the future that perhaps some elements of this model could be adapted to that kind of use, but it was not designed with that in mind. I appreciate the fact that the economic data is clearly not ready for prime time, but the rest of it, we are ready to move forward and use it in making management decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Sullivan. I guess Mike Fogarty is going to give the skate calibration report and the whiting report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to Pat for taking the tough ones. We had a number of straight-ahead requests from the council to address issues related to the skate and whiting assessments and the setting of ABCs. As everyone in the room knows, these are index assessments, and there are special considerations that come in to play with the use of survey data. Thank you. The SSC met in April 12th to 13th to discuss these issues. We benefit from a number of really outstanding presentations by the plan development teams, both for the skate and whiting plans. And we addressed the issues requested by the council to look at the guidance on specifically issues related to skate calibration and the whiting ABC calculations. With respect to the skates, we were asked to, one, approve a specific Bigelow calibration method to be used to set skate ABCs and to determine stock status, to approve calibration of the Bigelow catches to the albatross equivalents rather than the other way about, which would make it easier to directly apply future survey data. And then finally, to approve the use of a consistent set of Bigelow strata to adjust biological reference points and adjust the catch biomass medians as a basis for setting the ABCs. With respect to the first issue, the SSC heard presentations on three different calibration methods, the first of which was based on individual skate species and did not include specific information on the length compositions of the catches of skates. The other two methods did, in fact, bring in information on skate size distributions, but they were aggregated over all skate species. Based on a pretty careful analysis, we decided that the first method that really honed in on individual skate species was the preferred option in this case. There were some concerns raised about using the aggregate species size compositions in methods 2 and 3. So therefore, we favored method 1. It was also shown that, in fact, the performance of method 1 for both little skate and winter skate was superior in some post hoc analyses of the data. So based on that, we decided that, in fact, we would recommend the continued use of Model 1 for this purpose, but to explore length-based methods at a species-specific level in the future. We found that basically, however, in this case, the use of each of the three models gave fairly comparable results, and so there's actually no real large change in conclusions based on any of the three models, but nonetheless, the closest performance characteristics were shown for Model 1. With respect to terms of reference 2, we approved the calibration of the Bigelow catches to albatross equivalents. So that means we're going to preserve the long time, the 45-year time series for the autumn data, as the principal trajectory of change over time, and that we're going to accommodate the changes with the use of the Bigelow to the albatross equivalents. This will have a number of different advantages for us. One, it will avoid having to go to changing the reference points that actually would be required if we were to use the Bigelow now as a standard. We recognize that there are additional sources of error that come into play with the use of the calibration coefficient, in particular the precision of the estimates of the calibration coefficient that are less of a problem in this recommended course of action. And then finally, there are some circumstances where if we were to go albatross to Bigelow, that converting zero catches from the albatross would be a problem in the prediction. The third term of reference for skates involved approving a consistent set of strata to adjust the biological reference point and to adjust the catch biomass gradients for setting the ABCs. The issue here is that because of the operating characteristics of the Bigelow and her deeper draft, she can't go into the same shallow waters that the albatross was able to. So currently we're in a situation where we're not going in less than 10 fathoms depth when we're using the Bigelow. Essentially, that means that there are 37 inshore strata that are affected by this choice that we can no longer operate within. However, of those, 35 actually are now covered by either state surveys or by the NEOMAP survey, so they're being covered. So the impact of that change is being accommodated by the use of some of the inshore surveys that are now underway and being used very effectively in the assessments. Basically, there are also two more offshore strata that are no longer being sampled, one on Nantucket Shoals, and those of you who have fished in the area know that that's a good place to stay out of if you can anyways, and there's another place on the Western Scotian Shelf that also has very hard bottom with a very high probability of tear-ups for us, so we're no longer going there. So for the inshore survey strata that I mentioned, it comprises about 6% of the area that we previously sampled. The other two areas are much less than 1% overall of the areas. So with those recommendations or with those sets of analyses before us, we do recommend that we post-stratify the data in the historical data to use the strata that we can now sample with the Bigelow effectively. With respect to whiting, we were asked to address a couple of issues related to the evaluation of acceptable biological catch, and in particular methods of assessing risk and setting the ABCs. And we undertook an analysis that compared three different methods, the first of which basically simply looked at a constant fraction of the overfishing limit as a buffer to account for scientific uncertainty, and that was set at 75% of the overfishing limit in this case. So that's a straight-ahead calculation that doesn't take into account probability distributions of either the uncertainties in the overfishing thresholds itself or the stock biomass distributions. Those were, in fact, covered by Method 2 pretty effectively, and it can be done in a pretty straightforward way when we're using the survey data directly. Method 2 is the preferred method of the three that we looked at. Method 3 is a hybrid of 1 and 2, and yet it reverts at the end to using a constant fraction of the overfishing limit. So we felt that, in fact, actually the full information content in the data sets we had, both for the overfishing thresholds and the stock biomass distributions, were best met using Method 2. So as I said, we recommended that Method 2 be used. A second issue is that a range of overfishing probabilities should be communicated to the council. That can very effectively be done using Method 2. In fact, what we're looking at is the probability of overlap between the two distributions, one for the overfishing limit and the other for the current biomass calculation. And that can be portrayed in a pretty effective way, looking at basically the cumulative probability of being overfished as we change the ABC rules. So it's a pretty straightforward and easily understood calculation, and one that can be effectively communicated. So the SSC looked at a number of different ways of portraying that information and felt that that would be the most effective. And then finally, one issue with respect to offshore cake that we were asked to address. And basically here, because we're dealing in particularly in the deeper waters with a mixed species fishery of both offshore hake and silver hake in the southern area. And basically, there's a relatively small proportion of offshore hake in this mixed species catch, but it can be quite difficult to separate out under different conditions at sea. This results in challenges in monitoring species-specific catch limits overall. So as a result, basically, the SSC agreed with the recommendation that, in fact, we should have a combined approach to offshore hake and southern silver hake. And that was it. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mike, either on the skate or the wedding. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Mike, on the skates, just a clarification of what exactly has been provided by the SSC.
Mm-hmm.
You indicated, as we all know, that the Bigelow's got some problems, can't sample less than 10 fathoms, forcing reliance on state surveys and NEMAP more so than ever before. You said the 37 inshore strata were affected. I think you said that that's about 6% of the overall area that is surveyed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that understanding, have new ABCs been calculated relative to those particular strata and compared with the ABCs that we have been using that were derived using albatross information?
These recommendations are accepted by the council, David, then that calculation would be made.
Okay, thank you. What are the implications of our accepting that recommendation for skate? The implications for all the other stocks of species, all the other stocks that would be less than 10 fathoms.
Mm-hmm.
If we accept this recommendation for skates, would we pretty much slip into saying to the center, you now need to recalculate all the ABCs, excluding the 37 inshore strata, less than 10 fathoms, thereabouts? Is that what the likely outcome would be?
Well, a couple things about that, David. One is that the kinds of issues that we're talking about here really would affect only the index-based assessments, not the analytical assessments. There are other ways of getting around the problem in the analytical assessments. For the index-based assessments, the problem that I mentioned is offset by having the aerial coverage both of NEAMAP and the state surveys to help us understand a little bit better about the connection or the distribution of the biomass in the inshore area. So that would, in fact, require some additional calibration studies, but they can be done with existing data. So I wouldn't anticipate a big problem in filling in that gap in that way, because we have, in most cases, a pretty sizable level of overlap in the time from when the Albatross was operating and when the insurer and NEOMAP surveys were started. So we have a way of getting a fuller representation of the insurer area. I mean, the reality is that it can't be helped that the Bigelow cannot get into the shallower waters because of safety considerations. And there are some very, I think, valid and straightforward fixes to that problem.
Okay, one final point regarding that. I assume that if indeed this recommendation is adopted and the service then moves forward to recalculate the biological reference points, that for the skate complex, the biomass reference point would drop. Fewer skates.
Well, it would. What again, David? What we try to do is to effectively bring in the additional information to make sure we don't lose the information from the inshore strata that we're not covering with Bigelow. So it would be premature to say what the implications would be, and to say categorically that there would be a decline, because we're not really talking about, in the full context of the analysis, eliminating information from the inshore areas, but rather to try to fill it in a different way.
Okay, thank you. Would you have any indication, any estimate of how long it might take for us to actually use that other information to make sure we don't have a data gap? In other words, NEBAP has been underway now for about 4 years, going to the fifth year, I think. Is there any intention at the center regarding how the NEMAP information will be embraced in some way to deal with the problem you just described relative to skates?
Well, we're very supportive of NEMAP and its use in assessments, and so we are looking both to support its continued use and also to bring it directly into the assessments. There are also, as I said before, a number of, as you well know, longer-term state surveys that we're also taking advantage of, that we're, in the case of Massachusetts and Rhode Island, for example, operating for several decades now. So.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little bit concerned about using this new calibration method to have new reference points, and the difference between looking at the calibration and setting a new ABC, and then the council setting a new catch limit. That seems very reasonable to me. But our process for setting reference points has always been through a SAR-SARC. We just had a data pool workshop for skate, so I don't think we'll be setting biological reference points for some time now. Because you didn't do that, right? The SSC did not set them.
Yeah, well, just to clarify, Paul, for the skates, the advantage in using the calibration from Bigelow to Albatross would obviate the need to recalculate any reference points.
Right.
It would affect our view of what the precision of the more recent estimates are, because there's a part of the variability that's due to variability in the conversion coefficient itself. But we know how to split that out and how to deal with it. So in this case, one of the reasons for our recommendation of keeping Albatross as the standard is to actually avoid the problem that you mentioned.
Just a follow-up, Mike. Can you say with any degree of assurance that based on the information you reviewed and with the new calibration model that the method that you approved will result in a higher ABC, a much higher ABC? Can you give a qualitative?
We didn't specifically look at that, Paul. And I should also say that one of the outcomes of the discussions within the SSC, we looked at undertaking some more refined analyses of the survey data to actually provide less variable results using some new analytical methods. And we actually at the center have had a chance to apply those now to the hake stocks, and we're about to provide them to the PDTs. So the reason I mention this is that part of the risk issue is specifically surrounding the variability in the estimates, and we're trying to, the more we can improve the precision of the estimates of the reference points, which is really what we're aiming at here, the less in terms of any kind of risk consideration accounting for that uncertainty becomes. So we're trying to help it in that way.
David?
Yeah, I wanted to just call the council's attention to the Whiting situation here. We're glad that the SSC picked a method here that quantifies risk. They call it uncertainty, but it really is risk. And if you look into document 8, between pages 60 and 70, it's quantified graphically here for you as well as in tables. So you can actually look across the graphs and pick your level of risk of F exceeding FMSY when you use this method. So this is a hope that we'll go in a different direction from here on in and have some attempt to quantify risk instead of just picking a number off the top and saying it's a flat number just because. So I just wanted to make sure that the council had a chance to look at this, and if you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer them for you.
Thanks, David.
Dr. Jim?
Yeah, this isn't necessarily a question for Dr. Fogarty, but when the hake assessment was done a few months ago for both silver and red, the reviewers considered the old overfishing definitions, and they actually had some problems. And they weren't the first group to recognize that they could be improved. So anyway, as an outcome of the SARC review, there are new overfishing definitions for silver hake and red hake, and they're described very well in document number 9 behind tab 12. But I was just wondering, at what point will those new overfishing definitions be used as the official? Do they require a framework or an amendment change, and then the SSC would use that as the official numbers?
Yeah, Jim, that would require council action to use the new overfishing definitions. Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, regarding the hakes, we find ourselves, I myself anyways, again faced with the issue of our using FMSY proxies as opposed to actual FMSY values. Do we have any FMSY values for the hakes? And if we don't and we're using proxies, what are those proxies?
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, the analytical assessments for hake were not accepted by the SARC. However, the SSC did discuss using one promising method, analytical method, the ASAP method, to provide at least a context for evaluating the proxies that we are currently using. But the proxies for both silver hake and red hake involve the biomass, BMSY proxies involve looking at average biomass levels, relative biomass levels over time. The time periods are different for the two species. They're 73 to 82 for silvers, and I think it's 83 to 2010 for reds. So there's a window of time from the survey that's used as an average, and if the last 3-year running average from the species or stocks goes below a threshold value of that average, that's when it's declared to have exceeded the reference point currently. So you're right to say that, you know, the plan development team and the assessment scientists have been working very hard to get analytical assessments for Silverhake, and they did an excellent job this time. It wasn't the final runs were not accepted, but there's a reason for hope.
So do you, that's the biomass proxy. Mm-hmm. Do you recall what the fishing mortality, the FMSY, what the proxy would be for that?
I'm going to have to ask one of the Hake plan development team members for the details of it. Oh, Jim.
Yeah, it's based on an exploitation ratio of the average catch over a long period of time relative to the survey index. So it's similar in concept to the biomass proxy, which is also based on the average of the survey over time.
Anything further on skeets, whiting, the hakes? Okay. Thanks, Mike. Frank? Ron? All right. Mike, come on back, please.
Ron Smallwood's Fishery Survival Fund. I just have some questions about the skate calibration. I haven't followed it that closely, but there's something going on. The Bigelow in southern New England, concerned about the skate there. What is it using for a sweep, and how does its catches compare to the albatross?
You mean the sweep in terms of the length?
What type of sweep it's using in southern New England?
So it's a cookie gear type, a smaller, not using rollers. The catches are much higher in Bigelow than for albatross for these hard-to-bottom species.
And do you have, has anybody tried to figure out the gear efficiency, in other words, the absolute abundance of little skate as opposed to just the relative index? Do they have any concept of what the gear efficiency might be?
At the moment, no, but I think there's some promise for using some both photographic visual methods and also for some hydroacoustic methods that are at least being discussed. I should also say that for the calibration work that we're talking about, it's really one of the most extensive set of calibration studies that have been conducted between two research vessels anywhere in the world. And even though we lost a number of our planned stations over time because of some startup issues with Bigelow, it's a very extensive set of data and really one of the most comprehensive ones available in the world. But also I should say, Ron, that there are a couple of species of skate, particularly rosette and to a lesser extent clearnose, that were not as well covered as the others.
My concern has to do a lot with yellowtail and winter flounder. I think that we're greatly underestimating the changes in biomass in little skate. I think the biomass out there is huge. It's a skate that stays very close and tight to the bottom. So even with a scallop dredge chain sweep, or certainly a 6-inch or 4-inch cookie sweep, they go under. They're low. So we're really underestimating the biomass. Now, why is that important? I think they eat, and Mike's expert on it, small yellowtail. They also eat the same food the yellowtail eat. They also eat winter flounder eggs. The yellowtail, they're thin, and they're also moving to the west. I think they're being pushed out by an explosion and expansion of the little skate population. How do we get a handle on that? Mike has indicated, you know, some video work. I mean, we're doing video work as well. But I think we should consider getting a piece of gear that could catch skate and yellowtail, something the equivalent of a Dutch beam trawl, out into a survey mode in southern New England. Because we have a lot of species. I mean, the presence of that little skate might be hampering the production of yellowtail and winter flounder, and God knows what else it might be doing from an ecosystem standpoint. There are also significant changes in catchability by season that we're not dealing with as well. I don't know how that's going to impact things. But I know we're always talking about numbers now, everything, you know, but numbers only tell a part of the story. We need to be getting back and doing some descriptive work, and especially when there's ecosystem changes taking place out there that are, I think, far in excess of anything that we're contemplating. So that's the point I want to make about this. They're doing great work moving forward, but we need to be doing some more advanced descriptive biology regarding little skate and the ecosystem relationship with the flounders we're concerned about. Thanks.
That's a good point. One thing I would want to mention about the observations were made about yellowtail and their thinness. We've actually, and this is an issue that came up in the GARM, have found that there are actually a number of groundfish species where there's a change in the condition factor. And my group has recently looked at that in some detail for about two dozen species. And there are actually quite a number that are changing. So it's more than just the yellowtails. And it does point to the potential for some changes in the system in terms of food availability. And it seems to be more than simply changes in abundance level. I mean, you would expect that more when you have a really strong year class, for example, as we currently have had for haddock, that you'd get a reduction in the weighted age. But we're seeing it for a number of other species where that's not the factor. So there are some important things to look for in terms of changes in the ecosystem, as Ron suggested. It also would be useful to, as he suggested, to try to sample side by side with some other gears that really, perhaps as a beam trawl or other type of gear type, to try to see what we're missing. But again, just to, you know, everyone in the room knows that typically what we're looking for from the surveys is rather than any kind of absolute measure, changes over time. So once we get the basic performance characteristics of the gear down, that we're looking for changes over time as the measure that we're really looking at. But to the extent that we could do the kinds of analyses that Ron's suggesting to get closer to absolute measures, it would obviously be better.
Frank. Thanks. I'm a little bit reluctant to make a correction to Mike because he taught me how to do most of this stuff. We actually, in the Bigelow survey, we're actually using a rockhopper sweep on the entire survey. It's not the cookie. The cookie was used on the albatross winter survey. It's a rockhopper sweep. But we just completed, over the last 6 months or so, a sweep comparison between the small cookie that was used during the testing of the Bigelow net and the rockhopper. So we're actually working up that data now. So it doesn't change the argument, doesn't change the suggestion or the importance of an analysis that Ron mentioned. But I think just to make sure the record is clear. Thank you.
Okay, that concludes our business for today. Before I close the meeting, Sally McGee.
Thanks, John. I'll leave some directions to a reception that's happening tonight at the Mystic Seaport Museum just down the street. It's not a mile and a half from here. Everybody who's in the room is invited, absolutely everybody. And if you want to take this and share it with someone else who may be in town for the meeting, please bring them along. Directions will be on the table up in front. Thanks. Starts at 6.
I will note to council, we assemble again tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning. Pick up the agenda. Thank you.